Look, Curtis. Beyond the gate. Section after section, precisely where they've always been and where they'll always be, all adding up to what? The train.
He said you guys are f***ed.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 432, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. Would he wear a shoe on his head, Dunaway?
You know I would, and you know I am. Mm. Oh, hi. Okay, Brian, don't overthink that polar bear ending thing. It's just to let the audience know that life on the surface is possible after the big freeze, and that our train survivors will be able to carry on like some kind of humanity engine. Okay, good. Done. Now I can stop thinking about it. But what if the bear represents something more? No, don't think about it. Well, what if it's Minsu's spirit leading his daughter and her eventual lover to safety like some kind of spirit engine for humanity? Oh. Choo-choo, Minsu! No, shut up, brain, shut up! Wear your shoe and shut up already. But what about that catfish and axe gang? What was that all about with that catfish? All adding up to... gonna be no sleep for Brian tonight. Choo choo, Minsu.
Now, because you brought up the fish, I'm gonna change Randy's intro just slightly.
Good.
Yeah, so here you go. It's gonna be based on something we said pre-show. This is just all for us. All right, here you go. Also with us, Randy, worst high five in history, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Hi. Brian.
Hi.
And we're all done with this here construction project. I got your final receipt here, and there are just a few line items I want to go over with you. Some parts of the train that you had in the plans, but got skipped over in the final walkthrough inspection. Let's see here. Okay, this addendum is for the chicken coop car. Whoo, that one's going to stink. I mean, every train car with living creatures and people in it's going to stink. But that chicken coop car, Okay, let's see. This marked up addendum is for your sleeper car between the Great Gatsby party car and the Euro Techno Rave car. We couldn't figure out how to keep those people apart during the sleeping hours, so we figured, hell, just let them all screw each other. What? You don't like all this? Look here, Mr. Wilbert or Wonka or whatever your name is. Your project here is D-U-M dumb. Now, now that all global regulatory agencies have collapsed, you could have used nuclear power, and you could have kept steel. When your number one goal is to survive the bitter cold, why would you add a massive wind chill to your habitat? You do know the Earth is still spewing out lava from volcanoes, right? Well, anyway, it's getting cold. I'll take my payment of baby meat and get out of here.
baby meat.
You know, I thought that's what it was going to be. I thought it was going to be baby meat.
Yeah. So the green is baby meat. Right.
These protein blocks are baby meat.
It's another reminder we need to watch Soylent Green sometime.
Yeah, I don't know why Charlton Heston sounded like Jerry Seinfeld there.
I don't either. Or it was kind of the chicken was a baby kind of mixed
kinda
in.
Was, yeah. The chicken was baby meat.
There you go. All right.
It tastes like chicken.
And finally with us, Brian, I always pull my fake teeth out when I want to make a deal, Ibit.
Oh, totally true. Oh, shoot. Oh, sorry. I hate to do this because I know we're recording Film Sack here, but I've been on hold since early this morning on another call. They finally answered. I'm going to wrap this up super quick. Just hold on. Okay, right. Hold on.
Go ahead.
Hello. Yeah. Atari Interactive. Yeah. I was calling because I've been a big fan of your games for years. Roller Coaster Tycoon, Roller Coaster Tycoon 2, Roller Coaster Tycoon World, Roller Coaster Tycoon Touch, and of course, Roller Coaster Tycoon Classic. Those are all real, by the way. And I was really excited when I heard you guys were branching out to a new genre, but I've got to say I'm having some real issues with Locomotive Tycoon. What kind of issues? Well, first of all, I'm not having any issues building the train, but it doesn't look like I can add any stations. And if I can't add any stations, the train doesn't stop anywhere. It just go. Yeah. Works as designed. Okay. All right. We'll move on. What about some of these train cars? All right. Dining car. Sure. Makes sense. And I guess I can understand having a sauna car, but a greenhouse and a dance club. Works as designed. Okay. What about the classroom? I need to grow students so that I can put them under the floorboards in the engine room. I guess I haven't gotten that far in the game yet. So all these weird rooms are supposed to be in here and didn't fall out of a copy of Tiny Tower or something. Okay. All right. One last question. This is something that I've never seen a video game company do. It's actually not the game. It's what you've got printed on the back of the box. You guys have this really bizarre Jell-O recipe. Hello? Hello? Oh. All right. Sorry, guys. Where was I?
Is that possible? Can you call like that? Can you just pick up the phone and
you can just call Atari Interactive? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it holds forever.
Can confirm. Video game companies do get called.
Yeah, they do.
There you go.
Absolutely do. The movie Snowpiercer, and we're here to talk about it. Now, you might say to yourselves, hold on, you guys, be careful. I love Snowpiercer. Well, you'll get no argument from me. I think this movie's great. And it was a shoe-in for me before I even ever saw it.
A shoe on your head?
Well, I mean, look.
A shoe on.
Yeah. It's this really unique take on a apocalyptic scenario. Most of those stories are people trying to survive in the world they've blown up and society's crashed and whatever. Instead, this is one that just all moved into a train and tried to figure out a way to make that work. It is at the same time sad and poignant and ridiculous and over the top. It's a weird combination. Mm-hmm. And I think that the primary reason for that is the perfect director and screenwriter, Jun Ho Bong,
who is welcome to As Foreign as Hell.
Yeah, he is. That guy is a Korean filmmaker and is known for some pretty cool, whacked out stuff. And this movie's like that. I don't know if it's his first English film. It might be.
It was the first I was exposed to.
I think it might be the first, because the host or whatever it was before this was in Korean, I think. Am I thinking of the right movie? Anyway, I think this might be his first English film, but he's made a bunch of really great movies and should be seen by people, and I think we've never heard the end of that dude. He'll be around for a long time making really rad things, and I think this movie's one of them. So I just wanted to get that out early. Snowpiercer is rad. You can't tell me any different. I mean, it's not a perfect film by any stretch, and I'm not saying I like this more than, you know, the ultimate Fury Road.
I don't think I like it.
Go ahead.
I don't think we intentionally did two weird ass movies that actually are pretty good in a row, but we did.
Yeah,
we did
it. Right. Following Cloud Atlas with this, there's not just this weird aspect to both of them, but there's also this kind of underlying, and not very subtle in the case of Snowpiercer, underlying. Global climate, hey, we better watch out or this is going to happen, and representation of the world's classes in a physical manifestation. Mm-hmm. Very, very apparent, very, you know, again, not subtle at all, but very similar with Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, and it's just this one, of course, is shorter, which is, you know, probably a good thing.
which is much appreciated after last week's marathon of 3-hour film watching.
Sure, but it's got this, like, I don't know even how to explain this. It's like I think it convincingly takes an idea to a place where I buy into it that I think is actually kind of hard to buy into. Like a train that just eternally circles the world and nobody ever gets out of it, and they have to figure out how to balance society, which turns out to be kind of a pretty dark revelation at the end, how they balance this small society. Is really convincing. Like I buy into the world immediately and I have no problem with it. So now when they're playing within it, and every car, you know, that you go from the back of the train to the front of the train, and every car that you move forward is a cleaner, better version than the car before it. Mm-hmm. And I think it made my imagination go wild about all the cars they don't have that they need. And I'm a little surprised they didn't have
like living spaces for the rich people.
Right. Right. Yeah. They didn't seem to live anywhere, which is weird. And also what makes them rich? Like, why are they?
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is one of those things where it's like, there's a lot to see. So you never really, you hopefully never really think about stuff like, where do people poop and where do they sleep in, okay. except for the back engine.
You know? Everybody poops in the back of the train, even the rich people.
This is a film that absolutely requires you to have no hangups about hard science fiction. If you want sci-fi that's explainable, you're going to have a hard time. This is a this is a check your brain at the door. And I had moments when I was just like, you know, like you're not having to pay really close attention to something for a minute, and your brain is like, yeah, but what's going on outside the train? Like, no, come back in. Don't do that, because when you do. You start asking questions that the movie is not ready to answer, and there's a lot of hand waving. There's a lot of hand waving.
Some of it outside the train, like this.
Hand waving. Yeah. Like why did they need to put a timer on that? When you want a hard boiled egg, you can just let it. You can let it go for 12 minutes or 13, or you don't care. Right. Yep. And this is like. This was like that. Why did they put a timer on that? I do not know.
It was good. Good to see
you that. You know who guy was, by the way, right?
Oh yeah, he's in everything, man.
But he was in Train Spotting, which is kind of a funny parallel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he sure spotted this train, no question about it.
Yeah,
he's great.
Yeah, I really thought there was some amazing casting. Like there was some nonsense casting in this film, and there was some amazing casting. And Ewan Bremner, was amazing casting. He was perfect for that look on his face when they're about to smash his frozen arm into bits.
Yeah, he's perfect.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Daniel Stern's portrayal as that character in this.
I'm not gonna lie, I thought the exact same thing. I went, "Oh my gosh, Daniel Stern!" And then I went,
"It's
of course,
the wet
there is
bandits.
A little bit of Daniel." There's a little bit of Daniel Stern in that character.
Octavia Spencer is the perfect casting for the and she's slumming it a little bit in this movie, but you can understand why. It was probably something she wanted to do.
Before things really exploded for her anyway. Like
before the fish man movie.
Before the fish man, before the NASA ladies one, before all her Oscar-y stuff.
Let's not name any of the movie titles that she was in. Let's just what they kind of were like.
Aside from Chris Evans, I mean, Tilda Swinton's been an Oscar nominee or winner. Octavia Spencer, John Hurt, Ed Harris. I mean, it is a...
And look at Chris Evans right in the middle of his Captain America run. He's like, surprise, I'm doing a TBS movie.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Wait, 2015, I think, was the same year. Is that the same year as Winter Soldier? Do I have that wrong?
Let me think.
I think that's right.
It should be close. Yeah, that should be, let's see, Captain America, Super Soldier. No, that's video game.
I think it's close to
2012. So.
Yeah, it's 2012 for Avengers. Then
Captain America, Winter Soldier was 2014.
Yeah, the Avengers was 2012. Okay. The first Avenger was 2011, but close enough.
2014
and we'd already seen our first Captain America, too, so.
Yeah, 2014 was the one I'm thinking of. But anyway, he according to the trivia, personally contacted Bong Joon-ho for the audition because he heard about the casting news and was like, dude, I want in on this thing. I want to be in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, here's the funny bit. I think it's perfect for film. It's like a great thing, and this is a good adaptation and everything. It's based on a graphic novel. Ibbot got so excited about it, he picked up the graphic novel and thought, well, I'll check this out because I like that movie. What's this
actually,
graphic novel?
Actually, I think Nicole Spagg bought it for me as a Christmas present, a birthday present or something.
Oh, that's right. And she really dug on that thing. You read it and not so much. What was the difference, do you think? What's the problem?
It's French, which in and of itself isn't the problem.
First of all, I couldn't read it, Scott, so that was a downer.
No, because it is translated, but it's very meandering, and I think I wanted something that was just more right to the sci-fi of it.
This movie keeps moving, so it just keeps right on.
There's actually an aspect of this film that I couldn't stop thinking about, which is that it stops moving. Early on in the film, a lot of effort is made to move people in a way that it looks like they're sitting on a train. Everybody has these like movements side to side. And when you look down the train, you see cars moving a little bit more than you actually would in real life. There's no way that cars would be moving as much as they're moving. But then after you've gotten used to that, the film just stops doing it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden for miles and miles, the train is perfectly stable. And it's like, they have to make a film. So they it makes sense that they didn't want to shake their actors for the entire train. Yeah.
You don't think it was just the fact that they, the further you get towards the front of the train, the shocks are better. Like they spent more on the rich people's shocks.
Less motion. It's like riding in the school bus. In the back of school bus, you're going to hit your head on the roof of the bus. If you hit a bump, the front. Well,
There's an artistic choice there also. Like when you're,
don't overthink it, Randy.
Exactly. When you get into the aquarium car, you really should not be thinking too much about how big is this thing.
That one car must be huge because to make it like that is crazy.
That was a pretty crazy visual. What I really like though is that they, instead of having the always bumpy thing, which you're right, it wouldn't be, I think it would detract from the film. Instead, they would remind us once in a while that these are cars connected together by having the doors open, like Tilda Swinton standing up and talking to everybody, the door open to the next car, and they would have that great effect of that space is moving dramatically before yours is. And so you'd see these background elements of the car in front or back would have like massive movement. And that reminded you, we're on a train and that's a car. And
they do a little bit of that, again, like Randy said in the beginning, like when you're seeing people stand up and then the car behind them, you see kind of go at an angle, like, move left and right, which is a really cool effect. Apparently they had a set in Prague with three trains so that they could do that, so that they could make sure that, you don't always just see zoom all the way down the length of the train. You see like the back car moving back and forth in the cars that you're looking at.
Yeah, it's super cool looking.
Cool effect.
Yeah, I agree. All right, sorry, Dunaway, you were saying.
Oh, no, that what you had to say was really good. I'm glad you said it. It was so good that I've got to put my shoe on my head and move on to the next topic.
Put your arm out the window. Say. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
All right, so here's some other trivia. The director Bong Joon-ho, I love saying his name. Mm-hmm. Right.
His name is also Joon-ho Bong.
It depends on where you're at. Like surnames work in Korea are different than here. It's all reversed. So I don't know. Mm-hmm.
The family name is Bong.
Yeah, I think the family name is Bong. Yeah. The name would be Joon. Middle name sort of Ho. My brother's real name, Korean name, is Lee Sung-soo's last name would Hong be Ding. Lee.
So what's he do when he goes to get those fancy cursive decal letters you put on the back of your car?
I see what David did there, by the way. I just didn't want to let that
Thank
go.
Thank you. Yes,
I didn't go unnoticed. It did not. I definitely heard it.
It went well.
All right, so he explains that the protein block idea, which, is in the comic, but his rendition of it was made by combining seaweed, tangle, sugar, and gelatin. I don't know why they didn't just go straight gelatin, but anyway.
Yeah, sugar and seaweed?
According to
because they needed something that people could hold and pass around.
And not crumble apart in your hands.
Yeah, and they also have some of the actors bite into it. And I was like, oh, wow, they actually have real food there. That's not just a prop.
Yeah, you could put it in your mouth and be okay. And according to the trivia, Jamie Bell, who played the angry Scottish...
Edgar.
Mm-hmm. Hated it and had to have it in his mouth and hated it. And Tilda Swinton apparently liked it. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think that's
surprised.
Shocking that Tilda Swinton liked it because she's
right,
weird.
Oh, that's delicious.
she is great. She is so great in this film. Like, she just eats up the scenery of every shot she's in.
Yeah.
But watching her bite into that brick while everybody's eating sushi.
Tilda Swinton loved it so much, she made Chris Evans carry that block all the way from the back of the train. Where he kept it, I don't know. But he was just waiting for the opportunity to whip that thing out and go, here you go, baby.
He was in a freaking axe fight. Where was that block of gelatin on his person?
Yeah, no kidding.
Next to his,
he put it down before he starts the fight. He puts it down.
Sets it down gently.
Keep this for later.
It's so weird that thing made it all the way to the front.
That thing really did well all the way there. But again, you're not supposed to think about it because there's so much cool stuff happening.
Yeah,
And she's my example of I wish I hadn't seen, because I wish I hadn't seen a number of things before seeing this movie. And I wish I hadn't seen The Hunger Games before seeing Tilda Swinton in this movie, because it's just a ripoff. And I don't think she's directed perfectly. Like, There's just spots where I'm like, oh, they should have had her do another take where she puts the emphasis in the right place or in the purposefully wrong place.
Oh, really?
Anyway,
I don't know.
Funny you say that. I didn't even think about Hunger Games and her character being a little bit like.
Well, it's not the same person, right? It's Emma Thompson. No, who was it?
It's a different lady, but you're right.
Oh, what's
it's
her name?
A
Parker
similar...
Posey?
No, Elizabeth.
I don't know. Anyway, there's a lot of examples of that in this film. I don't even want to list them all. The main ones were Hunger Games. I wish I hadn't seen that character of the fancy person who screams out over all of the hoi polloi. I wish I hadn't ever seen The Truman Show.
Right?
Because the Truman Show, the end of The Truman Show ruins the end of this movie entirely.
Well, yeah.
How could you cast Ed Harris there? I don't know.
Oh,
ever.
Elizabeth Banks, by the way. Is who
Elizabeth Banks.
Banks.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to think of.
But then, like, overall, again, I don't want to name them all. Overall, there's so much Charlie and the Chocolate Factory going on in this film.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're just like, and now let me take you to the next room where this really weird thing is happening. Yeah. And you're
waiting on for John Hurt to jump up and go, I'm going to the factory. But he
and
didn't.
you're a street urchin, right? So this is all wondrous to you. And so on. Like, that really hindered my ability to enjoy the film because I just kept thinking about Willy Wonka. There's big W's everywhere in this movie, you know.
That's funny. I thought about Truman Show. I did not think about any of the rest of them, but your comparisons are pretty spot on.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean the Truman Show thing is only it's made worse because Ed Harris is the guy, right? Because Ed Harris is the guy in Truman Show.
Yeah, I don't know. Would we even be thinking about the Truman Show had it not been Ed Harris?
Right. There's similar things, but
he plays that role so well. It's like, why wouldn't you cast Morgan Freeman as God? He is our current current actor who can pull it off.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that this Snowpiercer film is more akin or more of a retelling to The Wizard of Oz than it is anything else, because it's this idea that you're in the weird place, and if you get all the way to Oz, you're gonna find a way out of here.
You got to fight the witches, monkeys,
right? Those are just guys with hoods on their heads and axes in a dark car.
I need more explanation about those catfish. I need it.
The catfish blood on the axes. Really weird.
Why? Why would you take a precious catfish and use it for a dip your blade in blood ceremony? Why would you have the ceremony?
Very odd.
Why would you have the blades? Those were not the right weapons for that situation. Like, everything about that is so freaking weird. I want to ask the director, what's this doing here?
I don't know, but it was so fun. It definitely was making my mind go, what's going on right now? I want to know more story. But I also was like, but this is kind of fun. It's enjoyable. And I got mad. I had to get up and leave the room when I found out they were going through a tunnel and they were just going to get their asses handed to them. That I literally had to leave the room. It emotionally affected me to the point I was like, I can't watch that.
Well, it's very claustrophobic. Like, there's if you have any kind of squirmings in that direction, that whole sequence is a little rough. It's like, oh my gosh, dude, they're freaking going in that car with those guys. There's nowhere else to go. They can't go backwards. They're giant. They've laid enough pipe to leave all these doors open. So all they would do is just get back on their own thing.
That was freaking brilliant.
Yeah,
that was beautiful.
That idea that you would make a huge long pipe string and run it forward in order to keep all the doors blocked open, and then you also have the inside of the pipe. So people, if for some reason the outside is dangerous, you just go down the middle of the pipe.
Inside.
Like wow.
Yeah, and that ninja guy.
That's one of those.
Sorry,
like for all of the parts of the film where I was just like, no, it's not a closed biosphere. If you're scooping up snow from the front, I'm sorry, that's not a closed system. Like for all of those moments, that pipe, whew, I was so impressed with the idea, like the concept, right?
Yeah, it's a great concept. Wow. Yeah, because you're dealing. That's what's fun about this. It's like, here's a train. All right, now we got to think of the logistics of trying to do a revolt in a long snake-like,
when your whole battlefield is a bottleneck, basically.
Which is just unlike anything I had seen before. So part of what I loved about it is they didn't explain everything. There's a lot of park your brain at the door stuff, and I was 100% cool with it because you're presenting me with a whole brand new idea. You're not wrong, though, about the Willy Wonka stuff. It got kind of Tim Burton-y By the time they got to the classroom, especially this, maybe the sushi room or something. The
classroom. I had to come up with my own head fiction for that classroom. I was like, okay, where do the kids sleep? Oh, you know what? There's all this room under the floor. Yeah, so I started imagining this dormitory under the floor that they're walking on where the kids all sleep. And like, and then how did this woman get pregnant? And then, you know, like I had this whole head planted.
By the way, the trivia, which Bong expanded on outside of the film, Ed Harris's character, Wilford, is bisexual and impregnated the school teacher, has also slept with Tilda Swinton's character, and that bald guy who's shooting people. And the bald guy who's shooting people in the back car when grabbed the second hidden.
Oh yeah, that guy.
Hidden gun in the eggs.
The bad guys in this film were fantastic, which makes your heroes they better. That guy, the bald guy, is Tomas Lamarckis or something like that. Yeah, he's pretty cool.
They literally named him Egghead in the script, in the casting, because you're gonna do that. Like, he's a shaped head, and you're gonna associate him with the eggs gambit. You can't help it. That's what he is there to do, right? To pull off the eggs gambit. It's just Egghead, really. Okay,
but it was a really. I kind of like that stuff when they don't over explain it. He's just.
Yeah,
a henchman looking dude who's really strong, and I don't know why he's so strong. Or the one guy that they were fighting like tooth and nail in the steam room or whatever. Like, I don't know why he's like that, but I always like. I need at least one henchman to be super hard to beat. And
he's such a James Bond villain, right?
Oh, totally, dude! With a freaking dagger out of his shoulder, just hanging there while he's fighting. Like, it's just all of the little tropes I like are kind of in here, and. You know, they all culminate in this. We even talked about the stoner dude, that Korean actor is so great. Can't think of his name.
And while we're talking about casting, I want to return to this point about I wish the film had a little more breathing room, because the main henchman, the guy who ultimately is pursuing the rebellion from beginning to end, is his character is called Franco the Elder. Mm-hmm. It's played by a Romanian actor named Vlad Ivanov, which is the perfect name.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't find him anywhere in the credits. Did I miss him, or is he like, oh, there he is.
Vlad Ivanov. And then his son,
birthday, he just turned 50, by the way, on August 4th, two days after I turned 50, by the way.
Mm-hmm. So then his son is also a henchman named Franco the Younger. And that's played by a Bosnian actor named Adnan Hoskovic. And that right there, like I just said, Franco the Elder, Franco the Younger, I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't looked it up. And it's like, oh, I wish the movie had just given me a little bit more understanding of who this person is, what he's doing on this train, what his job is, how he keeps his position, how he trains. How does he train to be so great? Like that axe fight should have been absolute nonsense because everybody's stuck on a train, you know, like, but like just a little bit more information would have helped me.
I actually liked it because at first I was doing the same thing. My brain was like trying to go down that path. I'm like, okay, what's his backstory? And I was like, you know what? Do we really need to know any more than he's a henchman on a train and he's got nothing better to do than train. Night and day. What are you doing? I'm training for fighting. I'm training for killing people.
Just waiting for my moment when there's another revolt.
That's awesome. Yeah, all that stuff is great. By the way, I think this is fake IMDb news. So I'm gonna play this for it because I think this is fake. Hold on, where is it? Here we go.
Shit.
I think this is IMDb shit. This is the Eve quote, and we'll see if you guys agree. Writer and director Bong Joon-ho said the fish scene was inspired by The Godfather from 1972.
I don't know.
Come on.
I don't know.
Because what's the Godfather one? The horse head? Is that the reference?
Didn't they actually do a fish thing? Wait a minute. I'm trying to think.
I don't remember a fish thing. I remember the horse head, of course, but I don't remember the...
Yeah, but to me, it doesn't seem right.
That was completely unintentional.
If it's the horse, then it would be... There's no fish head in bed.
Godfather fish scene.
Yeah, look that up. Is that a thing?
Leave the fish, take the cannoli.
Sleeps with the fishes. No, that's not it.
No?
don't know.
Fish.
Who slept with the... Google wants to know who slept with the fishes in the Godfather.
Sure.
It says Godfather sleeps... Oh, maybe it is the sleeps with the fishes thing.
I don't know. Maybe so.
Is that it?
I'd be interested to know. That makes me want to have the graphic novel, though, because is that explained at all?
I don't know. I made it through the first quarter of the first... There's two big hardback volumes, and I think I only made it through the first quarter.
Oh, man.
I'll send you a shipping.
Yeah. Oh, you want it? You want the?
And I'll send you the books. You send me the shipping.
Goodbye, Dr. Jones. You'll just drop the whip and die. it just seems fake, but whatever. I'll take it. Check this out. Here's a fun Marvel connection. Jamie Bell and Chris Evans played members of the Fantastic Four. Evans played the Human Torch in Fantastic Four 2005 and Rise of the Silver Surfer in 2007. And Bell played the Thing in Fantastic Four from 2015. Now, remember, Jamie Bell's he's a little Scottish guy. He's not like a big dude or anything, but I guess he was the body actor that they put all that bulk on in the.
He wasn't like just the voice.
No, he was like the.
Once the Thing transformed, Ben Grimm transformed.
Pretty sure he was the Ben Grimm body guy.
Okay.
I think. Or maybe he did the voice stuff too. Maybe it's both.
Or maybe he was the pre Ben Grimm before. Oh, I don't know. It took me years to see that movie because I wasn't going to pay any money to see it. I was going to wait till it was on a streaming service that I was already paying for.
Yeah.
And watch
and
it.
Tilda Swinton hadn't showed up in the MCU yet, right? Because we haven't gotten to
not counted as MCU, but she was in Constantine, which is Marvel. So she was in that. We all saw.
Well, she's eventually in the MCU, though, right? I mean, you're.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Of course, the ancient one. Sure. Okay.
Yeah, but I just meant she had prior stuff.
By this point.
Yeah, right. And Constantine, we've done, right? Have we not?
I thought Constantine
we
was.
We have done Constantine.
Is it Constantine DC?
I thought it was Marvel. No.
I'm pretty sure. Oh man,
because he was in the Legends of Tomorrow, which is.
You're right. It is DC. It's Vertigo. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Why do I have that in my head as a Marvel thing? All right. Well, okay.
Maybe because Hellblazer is Marvel.
Maybe.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I just wanted to say, I feel like we have seen an insane amount of John Hurt lately, and it's actually not that much.
Right.
But we've seen Hellboy 2. We've seen V for Vendetta. We've seen Crystal Skull, and now this. And it just feels like a lot. I don't know why.
I don't know why either. You know what it is? Because he's such a singular dude. Nobody's like him.
Yeah.
Name somebody like John Hurt when he's on screen or when he's talking, and there's nobody.
Roddy McDowall. Nobody else.
You make a decent point.
Besides that.
You make a fair point there. But he's like, I don't know. Like when you see him, you go, John Hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
There he
elevates everything. I mean, he really does. And, thinking about the Elephant Man, one of the first things I remember seeing him in and not really even seeing him in it, just hearing him in it. But
oh yeah, he was John Merrick in that.
He was John Merrick. Yeah.
And a lot of people forget that Anthony Hopkins was the,
was
the dude
his
rolling with
handler,
him.
Yeah, his buddy.
His handler.
His handler.
Most importantly,
the elephant whisper.
Most importantly for me, he was an Alien. And I would just like to point out Alien is now 40 years old.
Yeah. Some kid was born the day Alien came out and he's now grumpy and thinking about divorce. 40. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You think he burst from his mom's belly that day?
Probably. Yeah.
He growled at everybody around and then ran into the corner.
Yeah, he raised a little Hellboy on the side.
I feel like we've gone way too far without
we're off the tracks
without talking about some of the most interesting part of the film in terms of who was in it and what they did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's Kong Ho Song and Ko Ah Sung as the imprisoned father daughter, is that
right?
What I'm
yeah. That's right. Father daughter.
Yeah, father daughter. Yep.
Like one of whom is clairvoyant. Like it's just so freaking interesting.
Yeah, they're
and
great.
I'm curious about what you thought. There's a big set of tropes there, like the trope of was in a coma and can immediately function. There's the trope of we keep them in drawers. I could go on and on and on. There's so many tropes around these people.
I love that stuff. I love that they thought he was addicted, but he was just collecting it all because he wanted to blow the door off. That was a great little twist.
There's the trope of security expert can defeat anything, even if it's been specifically designed to defeat him, and so on and so on.
Yeah, I love that guy.
So was his character, once again, deeper dive, I didn't want to go too deep, but was his character supposed to be Eskimo? I wasn't sure if that was the if that was what.
No, he's Korean, and they spoke Korean.
Oh, I know. I know he's Korean in real life, and I know that the movie portrayed it as Korean because it was mostly targeted towards an American audience. I was just curious.
No, the reason I also know that is because there's that whole sub story about the lady he got to know really well for years and talked to her. She wasn't Inuit.
She wasn't Eskimo.
And
she,
she's the Inuit girl, is according to the the credits.
And they kept he was talking about how he learned about the different kinds of snows and when you know it's, you know, how to survive in it and all that stuff. So he was making a lot of reference to her, but he's just some Korean dude.
Gotcha. So the he says some Korean dude that was led in the ways of the Eskimo so he could pass it on to his daughter so that she could survive in the Arctic tundra. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And his name is Namgung Minso. Minsu is his full name.
Oh, yeah. Namgung.
Yeah.
Minso.
Which is an interesting name and not very Korean from my perspective. I don't. So
that's what I was trying to figure out because I was like, doesn't that sound more like, from my limited exposure to Eskimos with the movies I've watched, I thought Minsu sounded.
Well, also, Koa Sung, her character name is Yona, which is unusual. But she's train born. Like, I think all that stuff gets kind of thrown out. Cultures are mixed and who knows how they do that. But I really, really liked his role. He's in a lot of his movies. He was in The Host. He was in, what's the other one I saw? The Good, the Bad, and the Weird. Great movie, by the way. 2008's The Good, the Bad, and the Weird is so good. It's like the strangest Western. It's directed by the same dude. What's he working on now? He's got like... Oh, he's got so many cool movies. Dude, I'm telling you, this director, and for all I care, that actor, you just got to watch these guys forever. They're all great. Mm-hmm. They're going to be like the next hot thing. It reminds me, it's weird because it reminds me of like the early 90s when we started getting some of that Hong Kong action stuff nobody had ever seen before. And we were just like, what
is this? Get some of that sweet Hong Kong action.
That John Woo stuff started coming overseas. And we started seeing like, Jackie Chan and newer things. And it was just like a revelation of films. I was like, what? It's a whole genre. Come over here. We like it. Come over here and be in America.
Do stuff for us.
And I feel like there's a bit of that going on.
By the way,
before
we get any Korean emails for me, Minsu is a Korean unisex.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So
my brother would probably tell
just
me that.
Just my ignorance of not knowing.
Yeah.
I've been educated now.
Oh, I take it back. Ji Woon Kim directed The Weird, the Bad, or The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, but it's still worth seeing. It's really good. Hmm. Anyway, that actor's like big time Korean actor. He was rad. To get back to him, to get back to Randy's question or point, that dude's cool and should be in things, and we should watch those things. He's great. And I kind of like that he was MacGyver, you know? Like, why not?
Yeah.
We got to have somebody who can do it all. And I love the conceit that, like, oh, he's hooked on this this waste product. Cronol? Yeah. Was it?
Cronol?
No, is it Cronola?
Granola.
Granola.
I thought I was saying Chrono at first, but I guess they showed it later on in
It's Cronol?
Subtitles. It's K-R-O, something like that.
N-O-L-E. Chrono. Yeah. They say it Chrono so many times.
Yeah.
She keeps putting her hand out. Chrono. She like, I love that little portrayal of somebody, because you don't know at that time, you don't know that she's not just addicted and desperately wanting it.
No, it comes off really well. She's the one that says this, by the way. Where is it?
He said you guys are f***ed.
She's just great. She's great. She's really good. Now, my understanding is, and I don't mean to jump so far in the movie, but my take is that at the end, I don't know how the book does it, but I assume there are very few survivors. And she's only, it's just like her and that kid, and they're just going to go start the world over. Is that the deal?
Yeah.
Right.
Anytime you end a movie that you only see two survivors and one's male, one's female, it's like, okay, this is humanity. This is Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm. Of course, 2 minutes after the credits roll, they get eaten by a polar bear.
That's exactly what I thought when I saw it. I was like, cool, so they're going to survive because of polar bear. And I'm like, no, they're not. The polar bear just saw them. They're going to totally
Exactly. The polar bear is starving, probably. Yeah, he's like, I'm not going to go eat those seven frozen people on the mountain.
And he's like, oh, food. Oh.
Wow, that's the voice of a polar bear, is it? That's pretty good.
That's what they do. They and polar bears aren't actually white, they're clear, but just, you know.
No, I see. Sure, they're transparent.
Oh, the fur is transparent, it's clear.
Yeah.
and I always am... dirty.
Again, it's a movie that invites you to decide what's going on. I'm going to imagine that a number of people survived the train wreck. That's kind of like if you're going to put all of humanity on a mile-long train, that train is going to eventually crash. That's just how I don't know, the laws of thermodynamics work. And so eventually it's going to crash. There's going to be survivors, right? If you have a train completely full of people.
I'll tell you right now that the sushi chef probably did not survive.
Yeah.
he was in the worst car to be in an accident.
I don't think he made it.
And it's like, we only have sushi twice a year. And then nonsense about balance. Yeah, and I'm like, what does he do the rest of the year? What does that guy do?
He should learn violin, really, to make himself more useful.
He really should, because that didn't work out well for...
No.
So here's the funny thing about the idea of them circumventing the world every 365 days. I don't understand why you would want to do that, because if the train is just meant to keep going, slow that bugger down.
The longer your track, the more places there are for something to go wrong, right?
For a bridge to fail over years and years
of not being attended to.
Right.
So yes, you would think you would want to go pick a place like Northern Africa and build a big circle.
Maybe there's some reason that the perpetual motion of it it has to be moving at that speed to be able to keep moving at that speed.
It gets its energy partly from the water, right? It's not just a perpetual motion machine based on no. It's kind of perpetual motion, right? They outright say that
he invented a perpetual motion machine.
Right.
Which is funny because when parts of it break, you no longer have perpetual motion. You have a human being down in the guts of the thing doing something. I don't know what the kid was doing.
Yeah.
It looked like he was pulling some poop out of a pipe. I don't know. It was weird.
There was a machine that pulled the poop out of the pipe, and now they don't have a machine to pull the poop out of the pipe.
Poop out of the pipe.
Poop out of the pipe. Yeah.
And the kids are like brainwashed. They're like in a fugue state or something.
Yeah.
Like what? Again, they lead you right up to an explanation that you really want, but you're not going to get.
I'm assuming they're on the chronal.
Right. And the food, that's possible actually. But I got the impression that Cronal was more like heroin, like it chilled him out, it wasn't a stimulant, even though it'd be much more like meth, I think, because it's waste product. So fine, that's a good explanation. But the guy who was making food, he used to be in the back of the train, but they moved him up to be in charge of the brick making.
I love him.
He's also in a weird mental, like, they don't explain any of that stuff, and I think I'm okay with it, but they don't really explain it. Here's the thing. I was sure in my first viewing of this movie, which was back in 2013 when it came out or whatever it was. 2013? Yeah. My first viewing of the film, I was 100% sure that they showed at some point that the cubes, the gelatin cubes were made of people. And not the bugs. I don't remember that.
I think we all assumed it because they were coming back in, taking measuring kids. I love Measure Lady. I just loved her. Yeah. Everything was measured.
She was so weird, man. What a weird lady.
And I didn't have that expectation because, again, I was overthinking everything. And my first thought was, you can't possibly, in a closed system, breed people fast enough and grow them big enough to feed the other people. Like humans just consume so much more. They need so many more calories.
Where do those bugs come from? Are they in the snow?
They're harvesting them from. Maybe they brought them in there and they just keep reproducing or something. And that's another question. Like Randy's right, you couldn't maintain the people thing, but I'm not sure you could maintain the bug production.
They're only cockroaches, apparently. I was reading this in the trivia that they're just cockroaches. So I guess you could probably just breed and harvest just cockroaches for the food.
It's a really odd effect, by the way. He looks down in the bin to see it rotating and see the bin grind in. It looks like the kind of the worst CGI you've ever seen.
it looks like one of the thousands of movie production studio logos we see at the beginning of this film.
Yes!
There are about 20 of them.
Yes!
And it looks like Cockroach Pictures presents.
Yes, it's like one of those. It's a very, it doesn't work. It's bad, kind of. That part's bad.
It's
by the way, my prediction really quickly while we're talking about Measure Lady. before we completely get off of Measure Lady. Mm-hmm. I think that she supplies us with Scott's gross out moment of the film, which is her sticking her whole hand in her mouth to clean off whatever it is that she's licking off her fingers.
That was right, close.
Blood and everything
else. It's close. The one that really got me was Swinton taking her teeth out for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah. That was so funny. That was so funny. Wish she had that.
People that remove their false teeth, when they remove their false teeth, I find that really unsettling. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I always have.
You know, I would have been relieved, though, if I looked down in that vat and saw that it was just bugs. Like, okay, that's better than I thought they were feeding us.
I'd like to know how they removed the horrible stink and taste. Like, that's like... watch any documentary about the future of food and somebody's going to tell you that cockroaches are not it because of they have this horrible stink and taste that you just can't get rid of when you're trying to extract.
They combine it with black cherry jello.
Yeah.
Right. And sugar.
Yeah. One would assume they had a source of gelatin. Who knows what that is? Cause you couldn't make them all rubbery and goobly without it.
Right.
So
horses.
Right. So there's definitely a cattle car.
Yeah.
And there's probably several, right? How could you raise cattle? Like, this is the best way to get gelatin. The best way to get those sides of beef we saw hanging in the cold car. Mm-hmm. Like, there's definitely cattle that are being raised on this train. Yeah. And that alone is crazy. Absolutely crazy. Yeah. That's happening.
And they never got to the cattle car and they never got to the chicken car. There were chickens too hanging in that room. Mm-hmm. So they've got a room to freeze them after they've been, you know, slaughtered and hung. Where are they grazing? Where are they feeding? They never got to those cars, or if they did, they just didn't talk to us about it.
And maybe that's the reason why this movie is packed full of so much go, go, go in action, because they don't want you to ever stop and just think. You don't need to, because Chris Evans doesn't stop and think. He literally is just storming up the train. He will occasionally take pause, but not really think. He just
there's some really brilliant moments that distract you. Like when the train is doing its big loop, and it's the only time where the train is kind of facing itself in a it's like playing a game of Snake, kind of almost.
Yeah,
and the one side you got suit guy trying to shoot him through the window hole.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the other side he's returning fire, and a lot of the bullets aren't making their way through. And that was really creative and good. And for a hot minute, you're like, I don't even care where they're at. That's just a really great stage.
Right. I mean, you think that for it to work, that has to be going around like a really long multi-leveled spiral. And it seems like there's just one curve that they're going around, but it seems like they should be going around like a four curve spring.
And they're just looking down sights too. So, I mean, it's not like they're scoped or anything. It's totally, but it's very effective.
It really is.
And I was okay with it. And I actually think the Willy Wonkiness of some of the train bits helped with this, because it gave it a surreal effect and took you to just a slightly more ethereal plane of existence. Mm-hmm. And even though it wasn't trying to say that this is a magical place, it would still make you sort of feel that way. And you'd just be more forgiving. You're like, well, all right, they got all these eggs. That's weird. And
that's weird, right?
Yeah.
That's
all weird. Warm. How can they all be warm?
Yeah. Just a lot of weird stuff. Then that teacher turning on everybody with a gun. Also, those kids disappeared like poof as soon as the gun stuck.
Yeah. That supports the theory that their beds are directly underneath their desks and they just slide.
They got tubes underneath there. Tube train.
See, but where are they giving birth? Is there a birthing car? Where are these kids being born? Because they're all younger than 17 years. Like, where did that happen?
By the way.
Yeah.
There's a trope name for the thing with the eggs that are covering the guns.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Chekhov's eggs?
No, it's called senseless violins. Oh. That's the trope. Senseless violins.
Oh, because so you pull out the violin case and there's a gun in it.
Right, there's a gun in it. And you're like, why did that person have a violin case in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And so that's a really interesting trope. I encourage you to go read it up on TV Tropes, because there's a lot of examples of a filmmaker thinks this looks cool, and then the bad guys would have hid their guns in there, you know. And like, there's just some great examples.
Yeah, I like that. I also like the idea that bullets were extinct until they weren't. Like they were sure that they. So there's even a class system for the soldiers that keep order in the final car, in the back cars. Mm-hmm. They're not allowed to have bullets, but teacher cars got bullets, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like,
boy, do they. You would think that train would just be riddled with holes at this point.
Right. Mm-hmm. And unless they've got like a metallurgy car where they're in there making metal.
You'd think that would be it, right? That, you know, you wouldn't worry so much about a greenhouse car as much as you'd worry about a car where you could keep making bullets so that if there's another insurgent event.
Yeah.
Right. And it's all a closed ecosystem, so you just pick your bullets back up and, you know, mm-hmm.
refill them. Reuse them.
Yeah.
I just really like that idea. There's something there about that, and I just think it's deftly handled. Because I think these movies are hard. It is a hard thing to create that imaginary space and be consistent and not have people mm-hmm. go, now, wait a minute, how do you get bullets made, or how do you get eggs, or where are the chickens these came in? Like, you could just do that all day, and if in a lesser hands or in, you know, lesser capable hands, I suppose, that none of that works, you know?
Yeah. And in the graphic novel, there are 1,001 cars in the train, as opposed to what we see is maybe like 50 in the, or assumed to be like 50 in the movie. We haven't even brought up the fact that next spring, there's a TV show, a Snowpiercer TV show. That's going to be a series that's going to be airing on TBS.
Shut up. Yeah. Really?
TBS of all places. But Jennifer Connelly is already cast. Actually, the first trailer has already come out, and it looks really good. But it's based on the trailer, it looks like it's going to focus a lot on the 1% front cars as opposed to the tail.
Well, good.
I mean, I'm in. I had no idea this was being worked out.
It looks fascinating. It looks really, really good. But the fact that it's TBS kind of scares me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, TBS, they're Mr. Robot, aren't they?
They'll do. I think it's an appropriate match.
I just think at this point, I want everything to be on HBO. Yeah. I don't know why, or Netflix.
Yeah,
I think I want no boundaries.
I think this movie would suffer from HBO or Netflix. I think they would overwork it. I think TBS is the trash place we're looking for. I think this will fit right in.
See, is that what the T stands for in TBS?
Yeah,
I'm looking TBS at their popular trash shows. Don't they have? I thought they had. They have a decent lineup.
Yeah, I don't, it's not bad. This will fit right in with their shows, I think.
Oh, USA has Mr. Robot. I had those backwards.
Okay,
that's also weird though, right? USA has Mr. Robot, which is amazing.
USA up all night.
They've got that Snoop Dogg adaptation of The Joker's Wild. They've got
I forgot about that.
Conan, of course, and Samantha Bee. I don't recognize any of these other things. The Detour, Search Party, The Guest Book, The Last OG.
Oh yeah, The Last OG, that's good stuff.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I
think season 2 is on. It's on Netflix yet? Season 1 was on Netflix. I know that.
Might be. Mm. But
by the way, Netflix has made some stinkers, which is a reminder that they don't actually make the things; they just pay for the things.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
like it's not like a series is destined to be any good. I don't know if you tried to watch Fuller House, but again, it's not necessarily Netflix.
It's got its audience. You can't blame Fuller House.
Okay, I don't know if you ever tried to watch Iron Fist, but it's not Netflix's fault.
Brian really likes Iron Fist.
I will stand behind Iron Fist and defend
him. And shout things. I'll stand behind
him. I'll stand right behind him in his little glowing Iron Fist.
Yeah,
get him.
I'm of the camp, which seems to be the predominant camp, that Iron Fist is really bad, but I like that Brian found
it. It definitely is the predominant camp, and I'll you know.
But there
I'll
is
see that you
yeah
know,
there is something though to be said for when you hear something's being made, like this new Breaking Bad one-off movie. Which trailer just dropped yesterday for.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Knowing it's on Netflix is makes me feel good.
It's not that Netflix is a guaranteed recipe for success, but it's a place where people can create things without the network or even basic cable limitations.
Yeah. Right. Netflix usually gives the creators a pretty wide berth. Like,
real life has F-bombs. Real life has brief nudity. Real life, maybe too brief, but real life has but real life has all these things that you can't show on ABC, NBC.
I see myself naked every morning.
I mean, those things are true, but I just think it's a reputation thing. When AMC was making more original programming and it wasn't all just Walking Dead, everybody it became this thing where you're like, oh yeah, AMC, they make really good TV shows like Breaking
AMC
Bad.
And FX, I feel like, have risen to the top of the basic cable.
I agree. So if you told me this was an FX series, I'd be just as excited or more excited because I'd go, oh yeah, I trust FX. They make Fargo's amazing and they make amazing television. So for me, it's not
Better Call Saul and
It's just about reputation. Like, are you good at doing this or are you not? And the channels that deliver most consistently are HBO, Netflix, and a couple of basic cable channels. And then everyone else seems weird when they get something good.
And I would have written off USA a few years ago before Mr. Robot, before The Sinner. I would have lumped USA's original programming into that same kind of, that's a bummer that it's on USA.
Yeah.
But, hopefully we'll be wrong about TBS as well.
Yeah.
The trailer looks really good. I suggest you check out the trailer as soon as you're done watching, recording, or listening to this episode of FilmSack.
Sounds good. Networks don't get to exist by having only bad crap, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even when you're talking about the CW or whatever, UPN or whatever, they don't get to exist if everything is bad. They have to buy and produce something good to be a network, right?
Right.
But bad is a sliding scale. There's so much reality programming on TBS. That's, I think, what's kept it afloat.
TBS is like at the back of the train. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Sticking their arm out, just waiting for.
TBS is the shoe. Is that what we're saying?
TBS is the shoe. Yeah, USA is kind of in the middle there the classroom and the greenhouse car. Yep, and Ed Harris is there piloting HBO. Well done, Ed Harris.
Yeah, good job, Ed Harris. Nice work.
These violent delights have violent ends.
I love Snowpiercer. I know it's a weird movie, but I think it's got, and I know a lot of it's just in your face, overdone. But I really enjoyed it. I had a good time. The only thing that failed for me, and it fell really flat and really hard, was when Chris Evans was retelling his story when he was stitching. Yeah. When he was stitching everything back together.
I disagree. I think it was really good. He was acting better than I've seen Chris Evans. That's some of the best acting I've ever seen out of that dude. Are you kidding me? It was great.
Yeah. Well, I think it was an honest effort, but it's really hard to deliver the lines he delivered and to take it to heart. It just seems so silly. It might have been the actual script that failed him at that point, but it just fell flat for me.
I found that really maybe the subject
rest of the movie.
Maybe the subject or the content of his stories and his yarn were not the best, or were weird. I know what baby or people taste like, and I know babies taste best and all that stuff. Maybe that isn't, people don't love that. Mm-hmm. But I thought that the actual delivery and acting was some of the best Chris Evans I've ever seen.
Right.
It was really good. And by the way, this is not the first movie he's been in where the earth becomes a frozen wasteland.
Oh, gosh. So many. He was literally in a movie called Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Well, that too. Literally, the story's not that different. It's just more sci-fi. But he was in Sunshine, which is one of my favorite movies ever made.
Yeah. I still need to see that. I tried watching. My troubles of trying to watch Sunshine.
So can I convince us to sack it?
Yes.
It is like the perfect film sack film for me because it starts out serious and hard sci-fi, and then it just goes off the rails. And then it's like, oh, we went off the rails. We're now going on a dirt track. And then it goes off the dirt track. And it's like, it's one of those movies that just like, I can't wait to talk to you about that, about how it feels so disjointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I would do that. There's that weird, it's the onboard zombie guy thing that you're mostly talking about. And Brian will... That's not a huge spoiler. It's just
onboard zombie guy.
It's just a weird thing they do in that movie. And I have a lot to say about it. That's a perfect sack movie. We need to sack it.
It's only streaming right now on HBO Go now.
Which is it? Go Now HBO or Go Now?
Go Now HBO. It'll be HBO Max. What's the new?
They can't go Max. That's
Cinemax. What's the new thing that's?
No, it is HBO Max, isn't it?
Is it really?
Yeah. HBO Max. They own Cinemax, by the way, so it's not.
Oh, yeah. Do they? Yeah, I guess they did, don't they?
Yeah, HBO Max. The new streaming service includes all your favorite shows. It's basically like Warner Brothers, HBO. It's like a huge combo. It's basically Disney Plus with their combos. Right.
But so anyway, that's where Sunshine is currently.
So Chris Sunshine. Evans was also in The Iceman. Chris Evans was also in a movie called what was it called? There's a movie called something like Playing It Cold that he was in. As Probably. Captain America, he's literally put on ice for 40 years.
Yeah.
He was in Winter Soldier. On the other hand, he was Johnny Storm.
Human Torch, right?
Yeah, the Human Torch, a totally different thing, yeah, right?
The extreme.
He runs hot and cold, you know.
That's right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In Sunshine, that'll give it away. Let's say something that happens to him in Sunshine is also very cold related.
Okay, say no more because it's already veering into.
We got to see it though. It's so good. Yeah, it's such a cool movie. But he's great, and I really liked him in this, and would love more of him in things like this. I want to
join Dunaway. It's just an impossible task to have to write an actor like Chris Evans, who we've just been watching, and he's so dirty this whole movie. Mm-hmm. He's got cuts and bruises now. He's just been fighting and fighting and fighting. And it's just, you can't have this scene where he's like, I ate a baby. You're like, they taste best, by the way.
Yeah, they do. That's what I heard.
There's just no way to avoid a little bit of unintentional comedy there.
I'm glad they delivered the information, because it was good to finally understand why Chris Evans' arm was like it was, and why it was going to be important when he sacrificed his arm to save the kid. So, but I just feel like that information was like, oh crap, we forgot to tell him. Mm-hmm. Here, stick this story in here at the very end.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because earlier on, when you see John Hurt is missing an arm and a leg,
right,
you think, oh wow, he got punished. He got punished a ton. They made him stick his leg out the train.
No, they made him stick everything out of the hole. What else is out of the hole?
Yeah, and then you find out later, no, like this is the moment when you find out, no, actually they weren't punished in that bizarre, stupid way. They gave up their limbs in order for people to survive. It's like, yeah, that story's coming a little late for me now. I already spent the whole movie feeling bad because they were punished.
Oh, I liked it. I liked the idea that, hey, remember that guy that got his arm frozen off on the outside when Daniel Stern put his arm outside? And then later it was like me.
Once again,
and then
I assumed,
everyone's missing limbs because they've all been punished one time or another. And then later you're like, oh, no, they were eating each other's legs and arms and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I liked that. You guys are crazy.
Story. I just didn't like Randy was saying, I just didn't like when it was delivered and it felt really rushed and fast, because I like to be fooled. I like to be misdirected. Oh, here's a misdirection. But I don't like for the misdirection all of a sudden go, oh, by the way, everything, it's just like this. Here's a totally different background and story. The train started like this, and it was just such a, I don't know, it felt really rushed and forced. I like the idea. The idea is good.
Yeah,
I know what it is. The most incredible things that have happened to me in my life, they're like my stories. Mm. I don't tend to just bring them up. Mm. Like, I don't meet someone and then we go on an adventure together, and I immediately explain those things to that person.
Yeah, want to know the darkest, deepest time in my life? Yeah, yeah. Let me tell you.
And this is like... this is like a character that has spent the whole movie up to this moment with one purpose, and that is to get to the front of the train. And then, like, even to the point where the reason he's having this, he's telling this story, is to convince another character to help him get to the front of the train, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you don't think you would stop, you would stop being so single-minded and be like, did I ever tell you about the time I... ate a baby.
Whoa. Why is that playing? Hold on. Jeez.
Way to kind of connect it to
typical film psycho. So Dunaway, yes. You're right. It's an odd thing.
I wouldn't say I'm right, but I'm just saying that distracted me heavily.
I totally get that. Yeah. That's totally fine.
But I love Chris Evans everywhere else, because nobody can walk down a train and look determined more than Chris Evans. That man, he is the most determined, and you feel like he's doing the right thing. That's the reason why he's Captain America, because you look at him, you're like,
right,
I don't know why he's so determined, but he looks like he's determined and right.
Yeah, he's right no matter what's going on here. I just know that he's right and he's doing the right thing, because that's Chris Evans. Right. Do you the conceit that the old man in the back, John Hurt, and old man in the front, Ed Harris, are this whole thing is them? It's a plan. It was always a plan.
Right. Don't listen to the devil. Is what Hurt tells him along the way to don't listen to the devil. The devil's going to try to fool you.
So you think he was not? He thinks so. You think that was all a ruse?
That was all devil talk. I believe that was just devil talk.
I hope so, because that bummed me out when I heard it.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember going, really? Come on, John Hurt turned on everybody, or this was all just a plan, and he knew about it. Like, that sucks.
No, he was trying to flip it, because you know he was trying to flip it. He was trying to destroy him.
I hadn't thought about the whole. This is kind of a heaven and hell thing going on that train.
Yeah, totally.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
The sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Probably, like, I'm sure there's some parallels to Dante's Inferno with the circles of hell.
You know, oh, right. Yeah. You know, the worst ones when they're all doing drugs in little grotto freaking hot tubs. That's the
right. Yeah. That was a skeevy car, right? Just like a couple really shallow hot tubs. Yeah.
Everything was like slowly getting classier all the way up the train. Oh, a little classier, a little classier, a little classier. Okay. Now we went too far class. Yep. Now we're in some kind of weird sex and drug. I don't know. Instagram.
Do you realize how hard it would be to walk through that car? There's so many of them where it's like, why did you have a handrail? Why do you make this so? Like, seriously, you would fall into those useless pools all the time walking through that train car.
There's no, how do I put this? Zero OSHA approved.
That's right.
You should give yourself a trope alert.
Yeah.
Right. That's a big trope in this movie.
Sure, why not?
So is he protected by hedonism? Is that what was Ed Harris's character? He was protected by the evil?
I don't know.
Oh, right. So, yeah. You always wonder, how does the top of the pyramid of evil protect his position, right? Because, like, why wouldn't the henchman turn on him? I think his main henchwoman, the one with the pistol at the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think he, like, charmed her. I think she's living in that haze that so many other people are, you know, where he's done something with a drug or something. Because there's just no... There's no explaining why the people in car number three wouldn't, you know, take over car number two, you know?
She is a singular character in this movie in that I don't understand what the hell she is. Like, I just don't.
But she's fun to watch.
Oh, she's so much fun to watch. Like, I like that kind of character. It's what I want. Yeah. I want you to give me a hint that she's weird and give me a couple of, like, drinking blood off her fingers and then measuring people and then... You know, comes out in her weird nightdress and gets shot. Like,
does she have any speaking lines, or is she purely?
No, she says some things. She says a couple of things. She even tells Chris Evans to sit down.
Oh, yeah, because she calls up the kids and says, "All right, bring me that one right there." And
we know now.
I loved when Octavia Spencer's kid was under her dress,
right, hiding between her legs. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
all I could see is, like, I was like, is it supposed to be hairy feet? No, it's the kid.
is that weird dreadlock ball that he was playing with?
The kid wanted the ball. Yeah. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
I thought that was really, that was very clever.
It was handled well.
Clever things.
Yeah,
what would a kid want and what would be rare on this train?
Well, I have an example of that conversation and much more in clips. Would you guys like to hear some clips?
Let's do some clips.
It. All right, here you go. Here's the kid who wants the ball.
Hey, come here. What do you want for it?
In the whole wide train?
In the whole wide train?
The ball.
The ball? No. No, I'm sorry. I can't do that. I can't do that.
Yes, I get the ball for a whole hour.
Done.
The whole wide train is a funny thing to say because it's the narrow part.
That's his whole world. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no the wide is the wrong. He should say in the whole narrow plane or train.
I didn't know the whole long train.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't know Chris Evans was such a great negotiator either. He's like, no, not that.
Well, it's cool because it's that thing you do is, you know, whenever your sister brings her kids over, you always do that. No, I can't give you a chocolate chip cookie. No, those are just for good kids. There's only just one. You know, it's that whole little tease.
Right. No, just one. Okay, here, take the whole bag. Yeah. Get out of here, kid.
here's a shoe thing. Oh, it's her talking about the shoe. This is great. Here you go.
Passengers, this is not a shoe. This is disorder. This is size 10 chaos. This, see this? This is death.
I love it. She's great. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. And she's got that, for some reason, North England sort of country accent.
Cockney.
Oh, yeah. So good. She's just a, whatever. She's amazing. She's also one of the weirdest.
She's a treasure from wherever the hell she's from.
Yeah, whatever planet gave her up and sent her to Earth.
Right, we're grateful. Exactly.
Here's the Sacred Engine talk.
In the beginning, order was prescribed by your ticket. First class, economy, and frail orders like you. Eternal order is prescribed by the Sacred Engine. All things flow from the Sacred Engine. All things in their place. All passengers in their section. All water flowing, all heat rising pays homage to the Sacred Engine.
The Sacred Engine. Now, here's the best part of that. I like the idea that they kind of have a 17-year Bible going.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
it's like, in the beginning, the classist, I mean, that kind of answers my question from earlier, how people ended up where they were depending on what ticket they had. So if you had a good ticket, like some kind of luxury ticket in those early days, you were put in some really nice place. And if you were just like, we don't have a ticket, but we need to get as many people out of here before everyone dies, those guys just got shoved in the back. And then that's just how it stayed. Like mm-hmm. it was like somehow that was foreordained that you were meant to be in the car you're in. That's, I think that's great fun. You know, I mean, it's terrible if you're living it, but yeah. it's a fun thing
the
to explore. The thought
experiment is fun.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's part of what makes the movie good. All right, here's Captain America being all hardcore.
I'm going to make this real simple for you. You help us, you get your drug. If not, we put you back where we found you. What'll it be, asshole?
Asshole. Asshole. I like that.
Language.
I just like when people pronounce asshole instead of...
Asshole.
Yeah, you listen to asshole. Well,
but it's worse yeah. when you pronounce it too far the other way and say asshole.
Yeah. All right. I liked Edgar a lot, and I think he died too soon, but here's him getting all freaked out. Here you go.
Listen, would you get on with it, man? You're keeping us all f***ing waiting.
I just love an angry Scottish.
I agree, but I couldn't keep track of who was who.
Really? Edgar was
easy
to track.
I didn't know who Edgar was. When, like, he kept being referenced later, and I'm like, oh, was that the guy who got his arm froze off? The movie didn't take a lot of, steps to let you know who was who. Like,
yeah, they didn't constantly beat you over the head with Edgar.
Yeah,
shut up, Edgar.
That's
they
true.
Did, but it was it
I need
was,
that.
Like saying his name over and over didn't give me anything. Like I was just like, oh, one of the other guys that is not Captain America.
Well, that
you
resolution.
You need an opening thing where they just froze on him and him he smiled at the camera right. and they put Edgar.
Like the A team.
they could have totally fixed two things. They could have said it could have had Captain America go, "Hey Edgar, remember that time I was going to eat you when you was a baby? that was good times.
Those are good times.
And then
you taste best.
Go from there.
Yeah. That's funny how that worked out. All right. Here's a good one. It's got some, I got a beep in it, but here you go.
Listen,
oh, no, it's the
on?
Same one. Sorry. How about this one?
No.
Let's, the clearing of the throat on Snowpiercer. Here you go. That grossed me out. That was pretty gross. That's what's her name? That's Tilda Swinton clearing her throat
Tilda?
Before she spoke again. Oh, geez. by the way, Chick in the Bucket. I forgot. We got a Chick in the Bucket. It's the artist guy who was always drawing everybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a great... I like that actor, too. And he's in Fringe, and he was in The Blacklist. He's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's great. And his... I love the idea that there's an archivist here whose job it is, because right. there is no photos. There's no, you know...
Right.
Done with
Have
all
you
that.
Seen this boy? They get to hold up a drawing, which
yeah,
is really cool.
It was really cool. And and I don't know where he's getting his graphite, but it's all just super shitty, and I just love that. But he disappeared.
Well, the same... Probably from the same car where they're making all of the smokeless gunpowder for the bullet.
Oh, that's true. That could be. But I don't know. Like, everything's just so grimy. Maybe you can just collect
and
it and compress it and make
were,
it. Yeah.
If you were scooping up whatever's on the tracks, it seems like that would sometimes be dirt.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Guys, I just don't want to think too much about that.
Sometime. I mean, the thing is, it doesn't seem like the world is still snowing all the time. It's just whatever snow came never left.
Yeah, I was curious about, like, why would this train track be so long? It doesn't have to be more than a few miles long in a big, huge circle. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to have it, if you have a reason to circumnavigate the globe, you're going to have some crazy things, you know? So, like, right early on when there's, like, these huge waterfall blocks on the tracks, I'm like, oh, well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. They haven't been here in a year. That was really dumb planning.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, so the original idea, so it was just an opportunity arose. Willard typically would have been some eccentric, you know, rich guy who made a train that would have failed, but he just happened to be at the right time in the right place. So going 365 was just a gimmick, but it happened to work out because they froze the planet. Mm-hmm. And so he just lucked into it, right? Is that
right? So yeah. back before everything goes wrong, he builds a train track around the planet because he's a billionaire.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Right. He's just, you know, he's just rich and he's like, let's make something cool.
And I thought it was that he was anticipating what was going to be happening.
Well,
eventually
mm-hmm. he learns as well that because this is, you know, this train to build is going to take, oh, who knows how many years, because he's got to connect all the tracks according to the story. So to make that happen, it was probably, you probably didn't foresee what was going to happen until right up until it happened, because it was only a couple of years planning according to the story before they decided to send up the CF-12 or what it was.
This is a world that's filled with nuclear powered bunkers and lots of people. We just don't ever see them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's kind of implied that this is the arc. So everyone mm-hmm. else doesn't believe anything bad's going to happen. He's the only one that believes something bad is going to happen. He overbuilds.
Is this the most Frozen movie we've seen since Day After Tomorrow, or whatever it was called?
This movie purports to be the most Frozen movie. Like, period. Like, seriously.
Most Frozen movie you'll ever see.
It should.
Yeah. It's kind of it's like Hoth. It's Planet Hoth without all the cool Star Wars shit happening on it. It's just
remember, they don't give Ewan Bremner frostbite in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. They freeze his arm solid. Mm-hmm. Like that. Yeah. That is a. They're supposed to be demonstrating to you that the temperature outside is unbelievably low. Like. Mm-hmm. 150 degrees below zero.
But shouldn't now that brings up a thing I didn't want to think about. If that's true, and if that's what that proved out again, like, look how cold it is out there. Aren't you glad you're in here where you're not frozen? Then at the end, did it change that quickly over the next 24 hours that she could just walk out in it?
I think
you got to take wind chill into consideration.
Well, and also they talked about elevation. They said, elevation, it needs to be up, blah blah blah. And so then, like, later in the film, when they crash the train, they're I guess at a much, much lower elevation,
and you should be able to work it out, right? Yeah. They give us all the variables in the math equation, because it starts Happy New Year 8 years, so they're pretty much starting, they're ending pretty much where they started. So I can't remember the story where they said they started, but location.
Well, don't overthink it too much, because it's just like like this is like. If you found a way to use the atmosphere to devastate the Earth and make it really, really, really cold, the sun would just heat it back up, right? So, like, don't overthink that too much.
Yeah. Try not to, anyway. Here's the babies tasted best.
I know what people taste like. I know that babies taste best.
It's like veal.
Yeah.
More tender.
Yeah. Yeah. A little more tender. Yeah. You can, it just really melts in your mouth. Baby. Ed Harris, did you know that?
You are the first human being to have walked the total length of this train, tail to engine. Did you know that?
I'm going to use this now, right here.
Did you know that?
I'm going to use it all the time.
So does Ed Harris ever pronounce H's? Does he? Just like I said,
only with his name, only with Harris.
Human Harris.
Yeah, he's a Harris.
could we imagine that this is the progression of the character Kristoff from Truman Show? Like basically he says, all right, well, my giant microcosm reality show failed, but I'm gonna make a train now.
I got a new thing.
I think
all
that's
that money
fair.
I made from the Truman Show.
Let's just say it's in the same universe. I like it. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that he's still monologuing and sort of acting uppity and all that.
Right.
I love that, Harris.
But the line where he's like, hey, I got problems too living up here alone. I'm so lonely and it's really loud. Like, that's when Chris Evans should have punched him in the nose and knocked his head off of his shoulders. Like, are you kidding me? Trying to tell me that your problems are comparable. Yeah. Seriously.
Well, he's, you know. Pat, what are they? And that's,
was this before or after? We've had a recent, thing in the U.S. where rich folks have told the average folks that they should be grateful because our poor people are better off than any other poor people in the world. Yeah. And so, is that a reflection of that? Had that already come about?
Oh, I don't know. It's always been a thing. Like that's.
I think it's always been a thing, but it's been really a hot.
It's the whole let them eat cake thing. It's just a. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. a. You know, I mean, yeah, sure, lately, because it feels like in this country anyway, a lot of the breaks just go to the people with the money. So sure, that stuff hits a more raw nerve maybe, but I think that's a thing that just is humanity forever. Because there's always, somebody's always on the end of the food chain, someone's always at the top, and someone's always saying something shitty to the other side, and I think this movie's just the movie creates a really great little micro version of that society. It's like, hey, what if all of those same kind of issues of equality or lack of it existed in a big, long 1,000-car train instead of a giant wide world? And that's
train.
What
train is world.
Yeah, right. train is world. World is train.
Mm-hmm. Train is world.
Here's that's all of them.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I did know that. That's the end of it.
Did you? I was really hoping you'd have some of the kids singing.
No, I cut that. I couldn't.
We all freeze and die.
Seriously, that was so discordant with the rest of the film. And I know the point was to make it discordant, but it just bugged me. Mm. Just like, why? What's happening?
Yeah.
Well, so that they could eventually become defenders of the front part of the train again if there was ever another insurgence. You got to kind of brainwash these kids into thinking that they're good and the people wallowing in the shit in the back of the train are bad.
But the song was so bad.
It was pretty bad, but it was very, I mean, that was the whole part that you were calling Chocolate Factory. It was very Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, it was very Chocolate Factory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Danny Elfman could have written that song.
He could have. Maybe he did. Who knows?
Maybe.
Time for the checklist. It's the Film Sack checklist. Bug bars. Check. Bug bears.
Bug bear.
Bug bars.
Imagine the smell of the last car. Check. And finally, that teacher is nuts. Check.
And pregnant.
Good old Allison Pill.
Trek connection. Daryl says none.
But Allison Pill is the perfect Trek connection. She is in Star Trek Picard. She plays a doctor in this new.
Oh, really?
May not be in the database.
Future connection.
Future Star Trek connection. All right. Daryl, I'm disappointed. You should have seen the future coming there, buddy boy.
Future man.
Yeah, no, like, another one I was seeing? I thought I was could have sworn that John Hurt had maybe done something.
Right.
Couldn't find anything. So I looked around as well, and he's right. It's
Ewan Bramner feels like he could have been, you know, some sort of space alien. Stuff glued to his forehead alien.
Like you find out like one of the JJ movies or something.
The only tall, goofy looking Ferengi could be Ewan Bremner.
He'd be a good Ferengi, wouldn't he?
Lanky Ferengi. Yeah
lanky Ferengi.
Lanky.
For the soundtrack grade, I'd given a RAD for rad. I think it was good and appropriate and sounded great. And I don't know who did it, but I liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. It was appropriate to the content. Let's put it that way. Twitter post. Hey, it's where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. Yeah, that's right. We'll start with Randy.
Snowpiercer. A bunch of euphemisms for a sex party go here. Just like a Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Interesting. You just made yourself a Twitter template.
Yep.
Yeah, it's because,
just like a formula. Jeez.
Yep. Because, I mean, guys, there were so many.
Yeah.
The train goes into the tunnel.
Yes. There's so many that I couldn't possibly.
Laying pipe. Oh, wait. Mm-hmm. That's not it.
No, that isn't it. Laying pipe. Who's next? Oh, it's Brian Dunaway.
Oh, Snowpiercer. This movie is size 10 chaos, and after 30 minutes in, I wish I had upgraded my ticket to first class instead of protein block and baby taste best caboose. Choo-choo.
Baby taste best caboose. I like that. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Snowpiercer, I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling round the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. Oh, my God, we're all going to freeze and die.
Nice.
I like that you sang your Twitter.
Yeah.
Thank you. I use the musical notes emojis is what I'm going to use.
It was really good.
Exactly.
It was a nice job. Oh, look at this.
There you go.
Just handed to me this piece of paper. Apparently, this is the titles the movie almost had. These are alternate titles. Titles they weren't used in the end. I think Snowpiercer is very succinct, but it was almost called The Really, Really Winter Soldier or Frozen Water Penetrator, which seems like just different words, like a thesaurus version of the movie.
Right.
Frozen Water Penetrator. That's it for that. Hey, how about an email? We got one here from Jeff who wrote in and says, hello, Scott, Brian, and Randy. He sent this to filmsack@gmail.com. I frequently listen to your podcast as I drive all over North and South Carolina. You bring me a break from traffic frustration and long distances. I just finished listening to the Cloud Atlas episode, and during it, you discuss movie attempts that were maybe a bit ambitious or did not deliver as hoped. One you left out that has been long disappointing, though I have watched it probably 15 times, was Dune. I have been a huge Frank Herbert fan, and that series of books is very dense with political intrigue, science fiction, drug production, the spice, which must flow, environmentalism, religion, and battle. The characters are huge, the history is deep, and that book is the foray. Unfortunately, the De Laurentiis joint was a far departure from the books. While there was a huge amount that was intriguing, the Freeman, the Harkonnen, the all that stuff, it was dressed up as old special effects, a clunky script, and Kyle MacLachlan's acting. Oh, he's okay now. Yeah, he's gotten better. Yeah. I even watched the sci-fi attempt at Doom, and honestly, they were better in some ways. Excited for the relaunch in 2020, even if Jason Momoa and Dave Bautista are involved. That's not a problem. Those guys are cool.
Wow. Those are two guys I would not want to piss off with an even if.
No, I wouldn't either. You're going to get... Drax the Destroyer and freaking Aquaman together finally. It'll be great.
Right. Finally.
He says, Javier Bardem should make it even better. I would agree. Thanks, Sackers, for the fun, Jeff. Yeah, I think that you are right to look forward to that thing. And I think that Denis Villeneuve or
Villeneuve, yeah.
He's proven himself to be good stewards of this stuff. That Blade Runner sequel was incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. Randy's Arrival, Blade Runner, those were all just really
Serpico. What was it called?
Sicario.
Sicario is amazing. Yeah. Randy, I dare you to find something wrong with his work lately.
Long, dense literature is hard.
Yeah.
It's like we have seen, it's just really hard to live up to the expectations of the people who love the book American Gods or the people who love the Dark Tower series, or I could go on and on, right? And I think it's trite at this point to talk about Game of Thrones not sticking the landing, but when it's dense and long, it's difficult. And Dune
just
is
like a Saturday night at Ibbotson.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. I think it's really hard. I just think if there's anyone up to the challenge, it's this dude.
Yeah.
And there's also a Dune series that will come in after this is done that will carry through and he's producing. So the goal here is not to try to jam it all, you know, jam those giant books all into one two-hour experiment. It's to kick this thing off and then go into full series production.
That's the one part that does worry me. Is I'm worried they're going to do something in the movie to try to bend to the will of a longer term TV series.
Oh, right. Right. Sacrifice a concise story because they want to set it up for future stuff.
In Villeneuve, I trust. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I do.
I like that guy. He's not let me down.
He hasn't failed me yet, but we'll see.
Yeah, he makes really great movies. He's an incredible visionary dude. And also, I would argue that Dave Bautista's best role was that short Blade Runner thing he had at the beginning.
Oh, so good.
He was really good in that role, and I'd take it. I'd put that up against any other casting. I think he was incredible in that role. So I think you can. I think it's okay that those two dudes are in a Villeneuve movie because the guy knows how to get stuff out of people that you wouldn't expect. Mm-hmm. So It's going to be good. Just, and I just want to watch Blade Runner again. Like, I love 2049. Oh, my gosh.
So good. Mm-hmm.
Loved it. Yep. If it wasn't for, if Fury Road didn't exist, pretty sure I'd be talking about 2049 incessantly all day.
Don't compare them like that.
It's easy to compare them. They're both amazing and incredible. Sure. Why not? And
sure.
Why not?
Because Blade Runner is so slow and methodical, and Fury Road is so exciting and it has so much like energy. Like, they're just I don't like comparing those movies.
I'm not comparing them and saying they're the same. I'm just saying they're the two of my favorite movies of the last 10 years.
Same.
They're not the same. They're very different. Same. And I'm glad we can have both. That's the nice thing is we get to have both, right? Freaking same over there.
Same.
Anyway, Jeff, thanks for your email. Filmsack@gmail.com is where you send those emails. Our next film is...
Limitless.
There's no limit to that
less
movie.
Less limits.
Yeah. No limit. I've never seen Limitless, so I'm excited to see Limitless.
Oh, this is exciting then. It's a Neil Berger film. That's a director. Mm-hmm. Neil Berger. He made my favorite alternative to The Prestige. It's the movie called The Illusionist.
Oh yeah, The Illusionist is great. Sure.
And it stars, you know, Bradley Cooper and Anna Friel, back when Anna Friel was in movies.
Mm-hmm. He also directed Divergent. I don't know if that was any good.
That was one of those young adult adaptations.
Yeah.
I've heard that people like that.
I watched a bunch of those movies and a bunch of the Maze Runner movies, and I don't remember anything about they all run together.
They're both great. They're all right. Both of them were all right. They're good.
Very popular books, right? Divergent series.
Oh yeah, really popular books.
Yeah, people are into those. Yeah. So
anyway, next week, Limitless. It's apparently a never-ending movie because it's limitless.
It's like the never-ending story with Bradley Cooper.
Yep. And I would eat a burger. I would eat a burger called Neil Berger. I would totally eat that. Be fine.
Neil Berger.
So,
but not a nail burger. No.
Wait, Robert De Niro's in this.
Yeah, Robert De Niro is in this, and Abbie Cornish too.
Oh, I like those people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like this. I might watch this now. I like the people in it.
Well, no, I'll watch it.
Now I'm in. All right. Well, that's great. That makes me happy to hear that. So that's next week right here. And then we won't be watching the TV show it was based on. But according to Brian Ibbett, I'm sure we'll talk more about
it's
this.
It's absolutely worth watching. Yes.
Yeah. Better than the movie, he says. So
I think so.
I'm going to have to watch both this week just to see.
I mean, I'm required by law to remind people that he also likes the Iron Fist TV show.
Whatever.
I'm with Ibbett. It's a little slower, but I enjoyed
You know, maybe Danny Rand is a little too, like, naive, but come on, he's been in Kun Lun for years, and he's kind of an idiot, so it's perfect.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
It's okay.
Naive or idiot. It's all the same.
Of course, I liked I liked The Eternals, so, you know.
Yeah.
The Eternals? We haven't seen The Eternals.
No, what was the one?
Don't say you like Inhumans. Please don't say
Inhumans. That was it.
Oh,
I enjoyed that.
I'm disconnecting my Iron Fist train car to that engine.
I enjoyed. No. Once we're in the same
we're
train.
Simpatico.
Same.
Yeah. You get the weird food gelatin bar car between you now. So. Anyway, if you would like to tell us that stuff, that'd be great. I already said emails. Hey, yeah. So next film, that's it. Limitless. Don't miss it. It's going to be great. That'll be next week right here on FilmSack. In the meantime, FilmSack.com is the website. You can leave us voicemails at 801-471-0462. I got a couple in the hopper. I'll play those next week. And you can also find us online via Twitter at FilmSack. And leave us reviews wherever you get your shows. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Eat babies.
We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Did you know that?